tradition here of discussing the title of the. So this is not going about to be about the political code nor private information material, and surprisingly not about public key encryption with special properties. So just by elimination, it's about public key.
What's that?
Okay, so I'll start with the story. There's Dr. Alice and Dr. Bob. And Dr. Alice wants to do some research, this time using real data, which is, okay. So she calls Dr. Bob and says, let's show our patients and records, and we will benefit from it. But Dr. Bob is, of course, privacy aware. So he says, we cannot show our patient's records because that would breach the privacy. But Alice, of course, has prepared her homework. And she asked him about, haven't you heard about this newest, about secure function evaluation? We don't learn the outcome of this research, so that is fine. And efficient SFE protocols do exist for data mining tasks. Here. And, left, I guess. And now she puts her most compelling argument: cryptographers have proved their privacy. So of course, we can use them. And he hasn't brushed up his crypto lately, so he says that sounds interesting. But let me think about it. So how many talks about PPDM that start exactly like this have you heard so far? So a week later, so this is an addendum to the usual preamble to this talk. Okay, a week later, Dr. Bob calls Dr. Ellis and says, I'm a little concerned. Although he learned about SFE in the meanwhile, he is worried about the outcome of the research, the analysis that they are going to perform. How do they know that it preserves privacy? And she pulls this argument. She says, we only use data mining algorithms. They were designed to find global trends in the data, but they weren't designed to reveal individual information. Okay, is that convincing? Well, he's not convinced. He said, well, they weren't designed not to reveal individual information. And have cryptographers proved their privacy? Well, she says no. And I wonder if that can be at all done. So this is going to be our measure.
Is that a medical doctor?
I'm sorry. Okay, so this is our next question. Is it possible to construct algorithms that are useful on one hand and probably preserve privacy? We'll try to give a first hint or some arguments that in some interesting cases this is possible. Okay. And notice that Dr. Bob has already noticed by himself that this is different from the usual SFE, because in SFE, we're given a function f, we compute it without looking at any other information. So somebody tells us what to compute, but our question is which of these functions f are good functions that they don't reveal sensitive information. So we're asking questions about functional privacy, privacy of the function itself. But still, although cryptographers haven't dealt with this extensively, the crypto intuition did prove to be valuable here, so don't throw crypto out the window. So here's the talk plan. So for those of you who heard my tutorial, it is the same, just that I threw all the fun stuff.
But, so give us throughout.
Sorry?
Give us throughout.
Throughout, of course. I don't have enough time for the fun part. I'll give some overview about how to define privacy and output perturbation. This is the framework that we'll use. And then the main part of the talk would be to discuss some strategies for constructing these privacy preserving algorithms that deliver three main results, and these are also the people. This work is joint with Blank work, McSherry, Smith, and Bashkotkova. So I'll talk about the first strategy is sample-based, then I'll talk about sensitivity of functions, and then about new published ideas about smooth sensitivity.
So if maybe I didn't understand correctly, but you said your goal is to find which Fs, to define which Fs would be private or not. But then why do you need the whole second part? Once you define which F is private, to
so
secure,
yeah.
Huh?
So I don't, we will not find F directly. You will tell me I want to compute this interesting information about the data, and I will try to give you something that is almost what you want. Okay, some like some kind of an approximation.
Well, somebody else will give you F, but you
exactly.
might output it or might not.
Exactly. And then we'll have some. Okay. So in the literature, two variants that I know of, function of privacy have occurred, and I want to make a distinction. In both cases, there is a function F that you want to compute, but instead we're giving an approximation to F. So A is this approximation. And the first framework that was presented is the private approximations framework by Fangenbaum, Michalek, Malkin, myself, Strauss, and Wright. And here, the rationale is why do you compute an approximation? Because F is inefficient or intractable, but yet you want to preserve privacy. So you require that this approximation doesn't leak any more information than F does. Our case will be a little different. In data privacy, the rationale is F may leak information, private information. In this talk, is information about individuals, and privacy means we want to control this information leakage by introducing this approximation. Okay. So this is the focus of this talk. Here's a simplified setting. We have our doctors, we have the data, and for simplicity, I'll assume that it is all in one single layer base, but it doesn't have to be so. There is some mechanism, an algorithm, that accesses the data, okay, does some computation. This is the data mining algorithm, and users can learn its outcome. But then there are also some malicious users, like this doctor. they also can learn the outcome, like they read, I don't know what, something American. What's that?
They interact with the box, or it's okay.
So for this talk, they don't, but in general, they can. Well, you will see Adam's talk, and he will give a more general definition here. and these users can also use some external knowledge. They can, what is this? Or they can go on they can Google or something. And what is privacy? A lot of work has been done on this since 2003, and I won't have a lot of time to describe that work. I will just present the definition from these two last papers that I will use throughout the talk. Some observations about privacy have been made. First, you cannot undo the harm that has already been done by some other data that is there, like this is actually the external, the auxiliary knowledge that the adversary has. We cannot undo it. Privacy is not absolute. It's not just that you have privacy or you don't. It's more, there are shades to it in a sense. And this is an interesting observation that I guess Cynthia will use, that privacy may be affected even if you're not in the data.
So
your privacy could be affected even if it's data about that only includes information about other people. Okay.
When you said privacy is not absolute, you mean in some provable way, or what do you mean?
So, it's an observation, like when you want to define privacy, like many of the old definitions said, if some condition holds, like if the adversary can learn something about you, then privacy has a breach. But what if the adversary just had, like, almost all the information, but except for this tiny information that he will learn from the database. Does that mean that the database is not private? I wouldn't say so. Like, if we use this kind of a definition, then it seems that we can't do anything. Okay, so this will be our privacy definition as indistinguishability. It's a thought experiment where you have two databases that differ just on one entry. And this is what happens here. And now we apply our algorithm. And what we require, and we get the outcome. So this is going to be slightly different from this, hopefully. And what we actually require is that they don't differ too much. So the distribution on outcomes here are a distance, and I will define this distance more formally soon, at some small distance epsilon. And this epsilon is going to be the privacy, the privacy problem.
The distribution is over what time here?
So.
Factors or only the.
What's that? So suppose this algorithm does something, I don't know, it does cluster, outputs cluster or something like that. Then you look at the clusters here and here, and the requirement is that these distributions are not too far away.
Okay, but the distribution, do you think of the axis, the rest of the axis is fixed, or do you
no,
think
the
of
the
random
A?
No,
so for A flips coins.
So the randomness is only over the random coins of A.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So this is, I don't assume anything about the distribution from which the axes are taken.
Like
this is like a worst case requirement here. So for any two databases that differ just on a single row, the outcome of the algorithm shouldn't help distinguish them too well.
Is it clear that this definition scales nicely if you change with the two rows?
It does, yeah.
It does, yeah.
Here's another picture of the same thing. So we have this algorithm that takes elements from the database space into the output space, actual distributions on the output space. And for any two databases that are close enough, they are distance one, require that the outcome is also within some small distance here. Okay, I haven't defined the distance, but it can.
So
and here's
like
the
embedding?
Definition. I'm sorry?
This is like embedding. There's a standard metric embedding.
So you can define, yeah. So in both cases, there are natural ways to define the metrics. A metric that we can define here. The metric is just a Hamming distance. Here, the metric is slightly different. It's not exactly the statistical difference, but a little similar to it. And you can write this definition in terms of these two metrics.
And it's both Lifshitz and Bilifshitz. You insist on both expansion and distort.
In this language. So you don't care, you know, for privacy, if everything gets mapped into one distribution, that's okay.
Nice. So here's the definition. An algorithm is epsilon indistinguishable if for all pairs of databases which differ just on one entry. And for all possible outcomes of the algorithm. Now, if we compare the probability that A returns this outcome on X prime, we want this to be about the same. So intuitively, this is what we want. In crypto, we would usually write something like this, that the difference is negligible, but that would be too strong in a lot of applications. We'll just rule out utility. So you could think that we could replace this with epsilon, and say something about the statistical difference, actually, not just the probability. But this is not strong enough, and this would be our definition. We would require that the ratio between the two probabilities is close to one. And how close it is, the privacy parameter epsilon determines that. Okay? So, is it clear? Okay, and this is going to be our framework, upper perturbation. In upper perturbation, the algorithm A works as follows. First, it computes the exact value F, and then it computes some noise. And this is what Alice sees at the end, okay? And notice that this is very, very general, because in particular, the noise here could cancel this and compute something new. So the fact that we're calling it output operation doesn't really restrict it, okay? And now the main question is, when can we have this noise small so that F is released accurately? And the intuition that we'll try to formalize is that when F is insensitive to individual information, we can do it.
What is released accurately?
So noise is small.
Noise is small?
I have a general question. So it seems like you're trying to protect individual information. Like for you, intuitively, the definition of privacy is individual information. Is there like a general thing where I would tell you what my privacy is and
yes,
you would protect it?
So it would fall into, we can define this framework, the definition in a broader sense, and you will describe which databases shouldn't be easily distinguished. And that would make your privacy definition. So you can extend the framework.
Okay. So it might be sufficient for some applications, but out of curiosity, will the constructions become much simpler if you would say insist on something like entropic security, as long as there is some uncertainty about X, you know, from the...
I wish I knew the answer for that.
Okay,
so I don't know. It seems that entropic security could, well, potentially help here, but I don't know how to use it. So we'll now start with the main part of the talk. I'll only give very simple examples of these three strategies, but we'll try to convince you that some interesting stuff can be done.
So would these strategies work for my question or only for the
No, for the question that I defined. So some queries here, these are very, Alice's computation is very simple. She just wants to specify a subset of these entries and compute a sum over it, okay? So we'll assume that F is this of this form. There is a collection of functions G sub I that take a row into the interval 0 to 1, and F is just the sum of this function over all the x's. Then we want to add some noise. So what we'll do here, we'll draw the noise from a Laplace distribution. I will describe that in a minute with some deviation 1 over epsilon, and add that noise. You see, so this is a stupid noise in the sense that it doesn't depend on x. We'll add that noise to the outcome f, and this is what Alice will learn. Okay, so just a digression. What is the Laplace distribution? In one dimension, it looks like this. It's like two exponentials, one going to the left, one going to the right. This is the distribution. And what we'll use is this property. So what I did here, I took the original distribution and added the delta slide to it. And the property that we will use is that whenever you compare two values here, so here it is, I divide h of y by h of y plus delta, and this ratio is bounded by e to the epsilon times delta. It's very easy to see. Okay, and you can also think about the Laplace distribution in high domain, in multidimensional case, and it looks like this. And again, you have the sliding property. So now if you slide it by a vector delta, then the ratio is bounded by e to the epsilon times the L1 norm of this vector. Okay, so recall this is what we did. We compute the exact sum, and then we add the Laplace noise. Why does this work? This is what we're looking for. So it's very easy to prove that it preserves privacy in our sense. So the probability that you give an answer t on x is this, on x prime is that. So what we're interested is in the ratio of these two things. Well, a simple observation is that f of x and f of x prime can differ by at most one. So we're using the sliding property. So because this is at most one, this difference, we'll get that the ratio is bounded by e to the epsilon. So it's a very simple proof. So when you change just one element of x, okay, so you change only that element in the sum, g is bounded between 0 and 1.
Wait, so the sum is over natural numbers?
The sum is over natural numbers, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, exactly. In this case,
to grow too big, right?
I'm sorry?
The concept is that you don't allow anybody to grow too big.
Exactly. So I bounded the gi's to be within some interval.
And the noise is there, so
sorry?
What?
No, the Laplace is over the reals, defined over the reals.
Do you have to say anything about the utility of this? Or
it's great. You have a tiny.
Okay,
yeah.
So, yeah. Exactly. Let's see how. Noise is constant here, you see? So, it only depends on privacy parameters. So, if you have large enough data, large enough n, mm-hmm.
So sorry to be a little thick, but if the noise is over real, then the probability that it attains any particular value is zero.
Yeah, but I compared the densities.
So this notation means that you are.
You're right.
Both the numerator and the denominator.
You can replace it with less than
it's actually with
density. Yeah, it's that. Okay, so already this tends to be useful. You can prove that if you have a data set D and now you want to make more than one sum query, but say, capital T sum queries of this form, and they can be adaptive. You can answer each of these with noise that is proportional to the number of queries that you ask over epsilon, and this is epsilon indistinguishable. And actually, you can improve the analysis by choosing a different kind of noise instead of the Laplace, and reduce the noise to root t over epsilon. And this tends to be very useful in this work with Cynthia, Blum and Frank McSherry. We demonstrated that many interesting algorithms can have a noisy version that is expressed in terms of these noisy sounds, and we can give algorithms for the PCA, k-means, it's a clustering algorithm, perceptron, decision tree, and the whole bunch of algorithms from statistical learning all go directly into our framework, and we can also give guarantees on the amount of noise that that is added to the output of this algorithm.
Wait, so okay, I don't understand this.
So this list of algorithms is of algorithms that you can express in terms. It turns out that you can express them in terms of sums over the data, and hence you can use the noisy sound framework that I described to get noisy version of these algorithms.
And the definition here of the privacy is what you said before.
Exactly the same definition of privacy. So the idea is that you're taking these very simple queries on the data and you construct more expressive algorithms.
So is it clear that if you can express these in terms of sums, then the utility of the sums transfers to
No, you have to prove it. It's actually quite painful. It's not not clear.
Could you, just a few words, what is the result of k-means?
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't have that slide here.
The result is that
if you take, we can simulate one iteration of k-means, and we can have, and then we have bounds on the amount of noise that you add at the end of that iteration. So if you believe that k-means is insensitive to a little noise added at the end of each iteration, so it should converge.
Okay.
I can show you the.
Yes,
the
basically, you use a noisy sum for estimating the size of each cluster, and you use by constructing the right predicate, and you use a noisy sum for estimating how many people are in each cluster,
yeah.
And then you can compute an approximate average for each cluster, and then you iterate.
I'm sorry,
yes,
but there's something
yeah.
I don't understand. Is it from what you also said? Is it sorry, but is it that you need to? Is it that your proofs that is it that you need to assume that k means or any of the other things is insensitive, or is it that your algorithm proves
no,
that
so,
it is?
So the algorithm actually proves that what we compute is insensitive.
So it's not that k means is insensitive. You compute something, but when
exactly.
k means is insensitive,
so this is what I said.
I'm
computing some approximation to k means, and this is the way I'm computing.
So it's
it.
Always close, and yet it's always insensitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, this is what I wanted to skip now because I don't have time. Okay. So I'll go to this. There was one example that I skipped. I'll go now into this sensitivity analysis, the second framework. So this will generalize what we've already seen. What's sensitivity? Think about the database space. Here is a database. And we're going to apply some function f to it. Okay? So this is the outcome. And the algorithm is going to add noise, and we'll get this distribution of outputs. Okay, you remember the picture that we want this, like if we'll take a second database that is close to it, we want also the outcome here to be close in terms of the distance between distributions. Okay, so let's take all databases that are within a sphere of radius 1, and the Hamming distance between databases. For all these, we can look at what we see in terms of f. And we want that all these images will fall within a ball of radius epsilon on the distribution side. So what is interesting here, the way to squeeze this into a ball here is to add enough noise to the outcome of f intuitively. So if f varies largely, we'll have to add a lot of noise. If it doesn't, then maybe we don't have to add so much noise. So I'll define this measure of how f varies around x, and I'll call it sensitivity. So the local sensitivity at x is the max that we get in this difference when we play with x's, the x primes that are within the unit ball. Okay, this is the local sensitivity. The global sensitivity of f is just the maximum over all the local sensitivities over all x's. Okay. And for the sound queries, the local sensitivity was always less than 1, so also the global sensitivity was 1. So what we'll do now, we'll generalize the result on the sound queries to general queries by adding the noise depending on the sensitivity of a function. So we have a definition of the global sensitivity as what this is what was on the previous slide. And the theorem says that if you add now Laplace noise with magnitude that depends on the sensitivity over epsilon, the toxic parameter, then A is epsilon indistinguishable. The proof is a one-liner. Again, it's exactly the same proof as what we had before. What matters is the difference that this, the max that this difference can take. We bounded it by the global sensitivity, so this would cancel, and we get that the ratio is at most e to the epsilon, as we wanted. So it's just a generalization of the sound. Well, root T was root number of queries, not root of sensitivity. Okay, so I can play with the number of queries.
I see.
Okay. So the question is which functions are insensitive, because those are exactly the functions that satisfy our intuition. These are useful functions, and I believe that most useful functions should be insensitive. Okay. And this is because the statistical conclusions that we make on data shouldn't depend on small variations. Okay. So at least we believe that useful functions should be insensitive. And we have some examples like means, variances, histograms, I will show in the next slide, slightly more involved linear algebra, distance to probability, functions that have low query complexity, so you can estimate them by just sampling, seeing a small sample of the data, and so on. So all these can be proven to be insensitive. Here's a histogram example. So a histogram, so the data elements are taken from this domain D, and we partition it into disjoint bins, and we ask how many items fall within each bin. So this is the histogram. And let's see how sensitive that is. So when one person changes his value, he can either stay, this person can either stay in this bin or move to another bin. So the total change is just in at most two bins, so the sensitivity is 2. So we get constant sensitivity independent of the database size, which is really nice. And so histograms are insensitive. By the way, if we used the previous framework for computing histograms, we would add noise that depends on root D. So we really gain something there, because you make D queries.
So far you're talking about real value functions. I mean, how sometimes you don't want to compute just a number, maybe you want to compute some.
So I'm talking about functions but you can do analogous work. Whenever your function returns elements in some metric space, you can do analogous work. Okay, here's another example that Adam will use rank. So suppose now our rows are just vectors over a field F, and what you're interested in is the rank of the matrix that is created by writing these vectors, as column vectors. And what's the sensitivity of rank? It's at most 1, because if one person changes his value, he can either leave the rank as it was or change it by 1. So again, we have a low sensitivity. So 2 functions that it's really easy to show, you can answer quite accurately.
Do you have an example of why would anybody want to
compute
the rank of a database?
Oh, yeah. To show separation results.
Yeah, but
I want to
know where you're in
all the
rank.
So Adam will use the rank as an example to show differences between 2 very basic models of communication in this world. Okay, so I have a few more minutes. Yeah, 5, 10. Okay, so I'll have enough time. So I covered these 2 simple strategies. I want now to get into the newer work. And the problem with sensitivity is that we're adding noise according to the worst case sensitivity. Okay, we computed the worst case sensitivity, and it turns out that some interesting functions like median, we don't think about median as a sensitive function usually. We think about it, typically it's very insensitive, but when you compute its worst case sensitivity, you add a lot more noise than what you expect. So in this framework, we'll try to add noise, say, according to the typical or the local sensitivity of the function. So what's a local sensitivity? So as I said, for some instances you have huge sensitivity, for some instances you have very small sensitivity. You don't want to pay in noise here the same way you pay here. And this definition of local activity. So can we add noise just simply according to the local sensitivity of the function? So you're saying that it means no. So the first attempt is this, we'll add noise according to the local sensitivity. And here's an example. Suppose we have this function. So suppose x's are just bits, so each row is a bit, and this function is just the minimum of sum of x's and 4. Okay, 4 is so that I have enough room in the slide to show the example. It can be any constant. So what's the local sensitivity here? So for these values, local sensitivity, for these values of f, the local sensitivity is 1, because each guy can change the value by f plus 1. But after you cross this threshold, then it drops to 0. So can we add noise according to that? Okay. So look at these two data sets. Okay, here we have how many? 4 ones. So f is 4 here and f is 4 here. We want to add noise here. Local sensitivity here is 1, here it's 0. Okay, so we want to add noise. So in this case, we answer 4 from n plus some noise. In this case, we answer 4. Where's the noise? No noise, so it's easy to distinguish the two. So can we fix this? Can we fix this? And the problem is that, the problem here is that this, since the local sensitivity function is itself sensitive, okay? And when we reveal noise according to local sensitivity, we can leak information. So we want this, a smooth version of the local sensitivity that will not leak information, will not leak beyond what we're allowed. So we define a smooth sensitivity as this function, n of x. It's epsilon smooth, upper bound to the local sensitivity, satisfies two conditions. First, it has to be an upper bound. So forget about this epsilon, this is just a scaling here, but it has to be at least the local sensitivity at x. And then, we want this function itself to be insensitive for all x and y that are in distance 1. The smooth sensitivity at x divided by the smooth sensitivity at y, this is bounded by a factor of e to the epsilon. So this is the smooth sensitivity. Here's an intuitive example. Suppose this is the sensitivity of the function. The smooth sensitivity will do something like that. So you cannot have these rapid drops in the function. That would then. But still, if you are far enough from this peak, the smooth sensitivity can get to be low.
So it's just like an insensitive
sensitivity
function.
Exactly. Insensitive version of the local sensitivity function. Okay? And it's easy to prove this theorem that if you add noise proportional to the smooth sensitivity, then privacy is preserved. Okay? You see that I haven't written here the Laplace anymore. This is because we need a different type of noise. The Laplace exhibits this sliding property, and we need the noise distribution to have that property, but there's some extra property that is required. But a lot of distributions can be put here instead of that do guarantee these two requirements. Okay. Here's another notion. What is the best noise that you can add here? If you want to have the minimum smooth sensitivity, I call it n star of f. And we can give this formula for the smooth sensitivity. So whenever you can compute this, you see it depends on the local sensitivity at the point at points y, which are at some distance from x, and this local sensitivity is scaled down by e to the minus distance. And it's, you can prove that this is also smooth sensitivity, and furthermore, this is the minimum of all these functions. So how to compute it? Slightly easier to use form is the following. It's totally equivalent to that. You look at all distances k, for all distances k, you look at those y's at distance k from x, you compute their local sensitivity, and you take the maximum, you scale this down by e to the minus epsilon k, k was the distance, and this is the usual 1 over epsilon factor that we have. So to compute this, it's enough to evaluate the maximum of the local sensitivity at some distance from x, scale it down, and take the maximum again over all the distances. Okay, I will not show how to compute it because I won't have time, but let me say what we know how to do for the median. So again, assuming that the x are bounded between 0 and 1, the worst case sensitivity would be 1. It's very easy to see. Like this input where we have half zeros and half ones has local sensitivity 1, but also, of course, this is the global sensitivity here. So if we work in the sensitivity framework, the noise magnitude is 1 over epsilon. But then if we work in the smooth sensitivity framework, let me do it in different order. We can show an algorithm for computing this n star exactly in quadratic time. You can get it a little lower with some tricks and losing something negligible here. And in O of n time, you can compute exactly, I'm sorry, you can compute exactly in quadratic time. In linear time, you can compute a smooth version that is a factor 2 approximation of this. Now that it can be tricky because it's not enough just to get an approximation, you also have to prove that this approximation is smooth by itself. Okay. And for typical instances, like if the x's are chosen from a random, you can show that the expected noise magnitude goes down with n. So you gain significantly with respect to the worst case sensitivity. So this is setting skip. Okay, let me summarize. So I define privacy in terms of indistinguishability. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to show the rationale behind this definition. And then I describe describe some strategies on building privacy-preserving algorithm using insensitive functions like the sum or the histogram, using locally insensitive functions when you can compute the smooth sensitivity, and then you can create complex functionalities from both of these. We present an analysis for some simple functions. And here are some open questions. So in general, it doesn't seem to be too easy to compute this n star to analyze it. And so one open question is an algorithmic question, how to compute n star for some interesting functionalities. Another question is to find some more expressive frameworks for constructing privacy-preserving algorithms.
What's wrong with your framework?
I didn't say it was wrong. We can express some things with it, but we would like to do
even more expressive,
other
like not just individual, but other kind of privacy. I just don't understand.
I'm talking about the same privacy definition, but I want to find some other ways, some other paradigms for constructing algorithms. So far, we have a few.
To cover new functionalities.
Exactly, to cover new functionalities or to cover
these functionalities with lower nodes.
So Kobe has some low bound that you know those quantities are really optimal, that we really know like doubly smooth or whatever, that it's really necessary and sufficient kind of noise level or?
So we haven't done that, but I guess it's possible to prove that in the simple framework that you compute a function then add noise, this may be optimal, but I wouldn't put my head on that yet.
Sorry, optimal in what sense?
What's that?
Optimal in what sense?
Well, meaning that this is the best noise, you know, given a whatever function, whatever, the best noise you can
get. So this gives the best approximation in some sense.
Even that, you know, you're using the Laplacian, you're using the Gaussian, you get better results if you use the Gaussian. You get things that are more tightly clustered.
Yeah, I guess that, but but in terms of noise magnitude, you could ask whether there is something that would go a minute out of you can maybe find something that would be a better approximation in terms of so even ignoring the difference between distribution.
Even a function, is this quantity, whatever n of f, or this smooth thing, is it really like necessary and sufficient quantity that says, okay, given a function, this is a quantity, I know I cannot add smaller noise.
Yeah.
So is that
something? That's essentially what you mean.
So if you want to say, I want to work within this.
I'll be talking about that.
Okay, sorry.
I put a perturbation framework, then that would be the minimum noise, I believe.
It depends on sort of how you quantify the statement. So if you kind of fix the metric space, you have to quantify what you mean by how much noise, right? But if you sort of go according to the, let's say L1 or L2, then the conjecture is that this will always be the kind of optimal noise magnitude for protocols that are kind of within this framework, compute the function, add noise, which is scaled by some parameters. But that's kind of it says, you know, anything which tightly fits the structure is going to look like this, but, you know, who knows? But there are more general results that Cynthia will talk about. Anyway, it's not clear